Okay. Now, this is Glenn Ryan, and I'm here with Irene in the Hillcrest Memorial Cemetery here in Porterville, California. And we're standing here in the graveyard at your brother's grave. Isn't that right, Irene?
Yes.
And what's your brother's name?
Faustino Coronado Jr., but they called him Tino Boy.
Tino Boy. And you're a young woman. How old are you?
I'm 28.
28?
Mm-hmm.
And you're about, what, 5 foot four?
5'3".
5'3"? Dark hair, a little bit frosted. And it's a hot day here. It's about 90 degrees. And we're standing out here, and there's flowers all around this grave. All colors. Pinwheel. Pictures of him. And with a ball cap on. And you know this guy had a difficult life, right?
Yes.
And that's not why you're here. You're here because there's kind of a mystery about this guy's death.
Yeah, my brother died on February the 12th. Leaving a lot of unanswered questions and unjustified actions and a lot of contradicting statements between Porterville Police and Tulare County Sheriff and Tulare County Coroner. So it's left my family with a lot of questions that need answers, basically.
This is a big mystery. Hello, guys. Some guys driving by. What should be a story of this guy struggling to do okay and maybe losing ground, maybe coming forward, turned out kind of wrong. But nobody understands, or you don't understand anyway, how it ended this way. And you can, maybe you can tell me, so this is, what day is today? It's the
188 days since he's been dead.
188 days. This is August the 20th, isn't it? Yeah, the 20th, yeah, of 2005. So this happened in February.
It's been 188 days today.
So, can you tell me the story? Do you know the story?
Well, all we have is here is a bunch of verbal testimony, I guess, by Porterville Police, because that's all we have to go by. And the only contradicting is, of course, the witnesses that say otherwise to what the Porterville Police says.
Well, let's see. Let's go from the beginning. He was born around here, right? He lived his whole life around here?
My brother was born in Tulare, and yes, he lived, we lived in Woodville, and then we moved to Porterville. So we lived in Porterville for the last 15 years, maybe.
He lived in the Woodville labor camp or the town?
The town.
Okay. And he had kind of, how old was he?
He was 2 years younger than I was. He was 26.
Okay. Did he have a drug problem?
They kept saying that he was relapsing to cocaine, but the way I see it is, if my brother was a parolee and he tested every week for his parole officer, how could the state not catch that if they were testing him regularly? That would just mean that the system failed him. If he was a cocaine addict or a relapse all the time, they should have sent him to rehab. That's what you pay all these tax dollars for.
Were they testing him?
He was getting tested every week.
He was getting tested every week, and yet something happened. And so tell me what happened that day. Because I know you don't make any excuses for this, but it's the ending that you don't understand. And that's what you're trying to clear up, right?
It's the whole picture. When you think about it, it's like the days leading up to this and the night before. I mean, it was like God threw a sign at us, because since Antino's 14th birthday, the five male siblings gathered together at the house. And from that day forward, never again did these five ever be at the same place at the same time due to one thing or another. It never happened. Well, that night, George.
What do you mean? All these guys gathered at the house?
Yeah.
This one night?
This one night. All the brothers and the sisters, except one, because she couldn't make it.
And then what did they do?
Well, my brother Tino was the one that noticed that, well, my God, you know, everybody's here. This is weird. You know, call Rosie, which was the little sister. And she couldn't come for one reason or another. But he was all excited because for the first time, the five of his, you know, his four brothers were in the same room with him at the same time. And that was quite, you know, I wish I would have had a camera that night, because they took a picture 14 years ago, and we never thought, you know, I never thought that was going to be the last time I ever saw him. I didn't even say goodbye that day. As a matter of fact, I was in the restroom when I just heard my brother's truck turn on, and all you could hear was the music get fade and fade away till they were gone. He said he promised to be back in the morning to play with the baby.
But he didn't come back in the morning to play with the baby.
No, he didn't.
And what do you think he did? What does it seem like he did?
Well, according to what I know, is that my brother dropped him off at his friend's house on H Street, and
which is downtown.
Yeah, which is in the middle of Porterville, central Porterville. And supposedly they started drinking and just calling people on the phone, asking them to come over and drink, and girls came over and started calling people on the phone, and that's all we know as far as up to that point. And then all of a sudden, from what the guy says happened, he changes the story twice. There's two versions of his story.
And this is one of the guys that was there?
He's the other co-suspect that did get apprehended that evening.
Okay. So tell me what that other guy said who got arrested that evening.
First he said that the first story was that he was in Tarabella drinking with a friend and that he needed a ride home, so he called my brother, and my brother showed up at midnight, and that he asked him if he could drive the car he had. My brother said, sure, go ahead. So he did not know that the car was stolen until they got to Porterville over here by the college, and that he told them that the police siren came on behind him, and that he said supposedly that, oh my God, this car's stolen. He goes, what do you mean it's stolen? But he acted like he didn't even know the car was stolen.
The brother?
No, the guy that was with my brother.
Oh, the guy that was with your brother. So he didn't know the car was stolen?
He said my brother stole the car by himself, got the gun on his own, and picked him up in Tarabella at a girl's house. And he didn't know what was going on when the police were chasing him.
Okay, this is his first story. All right, go ahead.
That was the first story, supposedly. The second story, when they went back and told him how serious, I guess, the matter was, and that my brother, you know, was dead, and that he better tell the truth. Then he said that what had happened, my brother left at 10:30 from his house, returned 30 minutes later with a gun, and told him he wanted to do a robbery.
Tino said, he says Tino did that?
Yeah, Tino told Hector that, yeah, that he wanted to do a robbery. So I guess he told him that, my brother goes, what about that? Hector asked him, what about a car? And he's all, don't worry about that. I already stole the car. The car's parked behind the alley, behind your house. It's ready to go. This was at 10:30. And according to police reports, the car wasn't stolen until 3 o'clock. So that totally just throws the story out the window.
All right, well, let's go back there. So what actually happened was
that at 10:30, supposedly they had the gun and they had the car, that my brother went out and got that on his own.
Two guys, right?
Yes. And that Tino kept telling Hector, supposedly, come do the robbery. And Hector said that he kept trying to talk him out of it, but couldn't. So then he goes, okay, I'm going to go with you, but I'm not going to do nothing. And he goes, no, you don't do nothing. You just wait for me. So then I guess around 3 o'clock, they went over to the Sunrise on Highway 190, and they both got off the vehicle, but only my brother entered the store. He went in the store, and according to witnesses that are on the Porterville Supplemental Reports, they all give different descriptions of him and of the man that robbed the store. And then all of a sudden, that he shot one fired into, and one shot got fired up into the air because he got impatient.
Okay.
And then they ran out of the store, and they took off. They fled from the store, what Hector said. And then that they went to Tarabella for a while, deciding what to do with the car, where to dump off the vehicle.
And this is all Hector's story?
This is all Hector's story. And then that when they were coming back from Tarabella.
In what car?
In the stolen car still. They were going to drop it off behind Hector's house on walking distance to his house. To Hector's house. Well, I guess when they hit Porterville, Hector said it was an undercover cop. Porterville police says it was a regular police car. So who knows? That they started to chase them, and then the sirens came on and the chase was on. The chase started at 4:44
in the morning.
In the morning, and by 5 o'clock, when it was registered on my brother's death certificate, he was dead at 5. But then you have the radio scanner that you get from the police, where they're talking to each other back and forth. And at 5:08, they're reporting my brother has a pulse, and he's still breathing. He's alive. They're requesting ambulance. But the death certificate says he died at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
But Hector jumped out of the car, and he was apprehended by the canine dogs, I guess. But what's interesting to me is that the officer that used the canine dog to apprehend Hector is the officer that was in the front of the pursuit at the end of the pursuit, which makes no sense. How could this officer in less than, 16 minutes chase, Hector down and still be able to get in the back of, in the front of, be the first car behind my brother's and actually the one that's saying what happened and how he shot himself? That doesn't make sense. He had enough time.
Slow down just a minute here, so. Now say that again.
The officer that was in the beginning, in the front, right behind my brother, is the same officer that had the canine dog that apprehended Hector. So while he's over here struggling with Hector to retain him because he's fighting the dog and fighting him, took two Tulare County Sheriff and a Porterville Police to finally get him handcuffed and get him into custody. But then that same officer has the same chance to drive away and go get back in the first car behind my brother's, the stolen car, and see the whole action. Well, he was...
Well, wait a minute now. Hector was... He was not in the same place as your brother, right?
Yeah, they weren't apprehended. Hector was over here doing... running away from the police. The police is trying to get him with the canine dog, and that's over there. Then my brother's supposedly running all over town still in a high-speed chase. The chase continued.
In a high-speed chase all over town.
He jumped into the driver's seat and took off again, is what they're saying.
Okay. So he's driving around town.
Yeah.
And they're chasing him.
And they're chasing him.
All right.
Two Portable Police and three...
And then what do they say he did?
They said that he kept... They are so detailed to the penny as far as the streets he ran, the red stop, you know, the stop signs he ran. But when you get to the corner of Prospect to turn onto Putnam, it's boom, boom to the point. He put up a gun to his head and shots fired. And that's it. That's all they say.
He parked?
No. They said that the car went rolling and it stopped on its own. But then when supposedly they go to check him for...
He shot himself while he was driving?
Yeah. And that's kind of hard to believe because if they're saying he's going at 80 miles an hour, my brother had one hand that was not... His right hand was deformed. He had no way of grasping, holding anything.
His right hand was deformed?
Yes. He had a little hand. There's
oh,
no
okay.
way for him to grasp anything in that hand. His only good hand was his left hand. He was a lefty.
So he had to be driving with that hand?
He had to be driving with the left hand. So you tell me how he was controlling the steering wheel and took the gun up to his head and supposedly pulled
with a deformed hand that couldn't...
With a deformed hand.
That couldn't hold a gun?
That could not hold a gun.
Wow.
That's what a lot of people don't know about my brother, because the paper has never said that.
No, it never has.
They have never, no, because, you know, we never thought of my brother as being different. We never made fun of his hand. We never even thought of him as being different than us. But in this circumstance, my brother could not hold an object in that hand.
How did he get this deformed hand?
He was born like that. My brother was born from birth.
A birth defect.
He had an operation to try to make him be able to grip things, but it was unsuccessful. And finally, my mom said that if that was the way God brought him into this world, then that's the way he was going to be. But my brother was never ashamed of his hand. He never hid it. Never. He was proud to be who he was.
So what do you think happened? How did he get a bullet in him? And the bullet was where? In his head?
That's the funny thing is that we don't know. We did not get to see the body for 6 days. When we got to see the body, he was embalmed. And wherever the bullet went in, it was already covered up. We didn't never... Nobody in my family ever got to see where the bullet went in.
An autopsy was done?
30 minutes. 30-minute partial autopsy. Meaning that it was not a full autopsy. Because they had already determined that it was a suicide. They were just had another criminal on the table there. Just wanted to get him, bury him, and get him out of there. That's what they wanted to do. And for us just to go away. And accept what they were telling us was what it was. And that's what it is.
Huh. So, he died in this wreck. For sure. Because he was dead. You saw him.
We don't know if it was a wreck. I mean, we don't know what happened. But my brother's dead because...
Was the car wreck? Was it
wrecked? An old car. And like other... Some witnesses say that he was all full of blood. And that's another thing. We've never recovered his clothing until 188 days later. And we're still fighting that.
Oh, you haven't been able to get his clothing?
Oh, no. And the funny thing is we were never allowed to identify the body because... According to Porterville Police, when Hector Pena was apprehended, he had my brother's wallet, which makes no sense. My brother never gave up his wallet, not even to my mom. I mean, that just wasn't
so
him.
So Hector had your brother's wallet?
Had his ID and his whole wallet. That was just a way to get an ID on him so that nobody would be able to touch the body or see it until they were ready for us to see it 6 days later.
Did Hector say he had the wallet?
Yeah, and they asked him why he had the wallet, and he said because Tino had told him to hold it for him that night when they were drinking, which makes no sense. Why would you give somebody your wallet? You have pants, you can carry it.
Does Hector talk to you now?
Hector's in jail. He got sentenced to 5 years in prison.
He's in jail? He's been in jail the whole time?
He was apprehended on the 12th, and he never got bailed out. He's been in jail. When the first conversation we had with Hector was when he called home that same morning, as I arrived to his mother's house to let them know that my brother was dead, they had barely found out because Hector was barely calling and told him that Tino did not kill himself. And that's all he said. That he had to go and he'd call later. And when he did call back again, I guess the family must have talked to him and they all got together and he changed the story. He didn't know nothing. That he got caught by the dogs and he was not with Tino when Tino died.
So he changed the story, huh?
Yes.
Wow. And Hector was tried?
He didn't have a trial because I guess they cut him a deal. He got a deal through out of the... He was charged originally with 8 counts, and then he had priors on all 8 counts. He was a parolee, a two-striker.
And he's done robberies before?
He had priors on robberies, yes, and evading officers, and holding guns, all of that. He had priors on everything.
And he, did your brother?
My brother didn't have no priors on guns or anything. He had a lot. My brother had been in trouble for drug charges.
But that's all?
He did a beer run back in 1990 when he was 19 years old. He did a beer run. And he went to prison for 3 years for that.
What's a beer run?
It's when they go in a store and get up like a 12-pack of beer and run out.
He did 3 years for that?
Yes.
No money or anything?
No, it was no money. It was just a beer run.
I've seen people do that.
Grand theft. Or a commercial burglar or something like that's what it's called.
Where was that at?
In Porterville. I don't remember exactly when. It's been.
But he never used weapons or any of that kind
no,
of stuff?
No, he never got arrested for weapons, never got arrested for a charge with having a gun in possession or a firearm or ammunition, nothing like that. It was always he relapsed on the cocaine one was when he tested dirty. That was the one he went back to prison was for that.
So it's he just had the cocaine problem after he went to prison?
No, he went back to prison because they said that he had tested dirty on a test.
Oh, I see.
And they're saying that he relapsed, but that's what we keep fighting, is that how could he be a relapse to cocaine? If you're out on parole and they know you're going to relapse to cocaine, they test you, and he was being tested. So I don't understand how he passed the test all the time. Or why they never noticed if he was drugged out all the time, why they didn't notice when he would go see his parole officer.
Was he drugged out?
I don't think so. I don't think my brother was doing drugs. My brother was a totally different person. That's the weird thing.
Did he live at home?
He was living with my brother. Because it was easier for him to get to work because they worked at the same place.
What does your brother say?
My brothers, I have 5, 7 altogether, but they're all, the littlest one is in shock because they're closer because they grew up together. The three older ones are like farther apart in age and they had already moved out of the house and did their lives. But these two ran together, they grew up together, so it's hard for him. And sometimes we, you know, think that he's gonna lose it one of these days, just thinking about him, because, you know, it's hard for him, because they were really close. Really close.
Well, I hardly know what to say. This is, do you know that there's been rumors that, of course, like in most small towns, there have been rumors that the police aren't always on the up and up sometimes?
What do you mean by that, on the up and up?
Well, there were charges that there were gangs and drug trading amongst the sheriffs.
I've heard about all that stuff, and as far as all that drug stuff, I don't know anything about that. What I do know about is the other thing about the harassing on these kids, these gang members. They keep saying gang member. My brother was not a gang member. My brother was a dropout, meaning that he one day chose and decided to tell him, you know what, I can't do this. And his reason for it was my mother.
Wait. Slow down there. He couldn't do what?
My brother was a dropout, meaning that he was in a gang before. And when he got out of prison, he decided.
Which gang?
He was in, I believe, ECP, which is a Norton gang.
Just Porterville?
Yes.
It's not a real gang like the Mexico gangs.
No. No, and they just profiled him all the time as being gang associate, gang member, da-da-da. They knew clearly my brother was not accepted by the Northern gang anymore and the Southern gang. He had no ties with either gangs. He was not supported by either one. He was just Tino. He was just trying to fit in now into society.
Because he was older. And that's all kid stuff.
Yeah, because of that and because of the fact of what he had been through. You got to understand, my brother was in prison for 3.5 years.
Yeah.
And we never talked about his prison life. When he would get out, when he was in prison, I always phased it out. I would try not to think about him because I didn't want to think about him being hurt or anything like that. When he would come home, he was different. He decided he didn't want nothing to do with that anymore. But it just seemed like even though he tried, the police would always find a way to harass him. I recall this one incident.
Were there certain police people? Certain police or all of them?
Yeah, it's the ones that are his age group. And that's what there is right now. It's his age group. And it seems like the right thing to do, what they're saying here in Porterville, is, hey, if you're a nerd or a dork or whatever in high school and you have a grudge for somebody, hey, just go to police academy for 11 months to get yourself a badge and a gun. And, hey, that will protect you.
Oh.
But that's, so, you know, they...
So it's a gang against another
gang.
Yeah,
so I'm saying it's okay for the police to have a gang because they're covered by a badge and a gun. But then these kids over here, they're saying that they're bad because they wear the same color or they're standing in the same place together. You know, I've known a lot of these gang kids that they say are gang members.
No, real gangs, wait a minute. Real gangs are like in prison.
Yeah. Out here, it's just, they just say that and they just run together, you know.
It's kids.
Yeah. And it's like, they all have their families, they have their kids, they might not have houses in Westwood Estates out there. They have their little apartments, but you know what? They pay their bills, they pay their rent, and they take care of their kids.
They pay taxes.
And they pay taxes.
And when they get old enough, they just grow out of it.
Exactly. So, you know.
Now they have real gangs coming in, I understand. Like from Mexico, and the ones from Latin America, the ones down there in Salvador, they're talking about that.
I have no idea.
You don't know anything about that?
No.
I just read the paper.
No, I don't.
I only know what I read in the papers, sorry.
Yeah, that's what's wrong here, is that...
But this is not a prison gang. Your brother went to prison, but he didn't join a gang in prison.
No, my brother did not join a gang in prison.
Because they wouldn't want him. He doesn't have a good hand. And he wasn't really a criminal. He just went on a beer run.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how the prison gangs recruit.
Okay. So... So they wouldn't let this guy go straight, is that what you're saying?
It's just like anytime you try, like one time this officer was driving by a house where they were all at, and they were drinking in front of the yard. The officer pulled around and came, and they all ran, locked the officer out. And the officer kept telling him, open the gate, you know, you guys better let me in, because, you know, I'm gonna get in, you guys are all going to get arrested. And my brother Tino, you know, doing the noble thing, I don't know why he did this, he went over there, went underneath the gate, put his head underneath it, and said, officer, I said, here's my ID, my name is Faustino Coronado Jr., and I'm a parolee, and I'm in good standing with my parole officer. And I'm thinking over here, because we read the reports, I'm thinking, what the hell was he thinking? Why didn't he just hide over there with everybody else? But no, he did the thing, you know, because he's supposed to identify himself. Anytime you're paroling,
that's right,
you have to identify yourself.
And he did that.
And he did that every time. I mean, I can recall other times he did. But that time was weird, because he did everything he was supposed to. And he told them, open the door for me. He goes, I can't, because it's my friend's house. I don't live here. I just came to pick somebody up because they couldn't drive. And he's all, okay, well, I guess the officer went back to the station and called his parole officer and told him that Tino was being associating with gang members, because that was part of his parole. He's not supposed to be around gang members. So I guess it all happened at the same time. When they're getting ready to leave again, the same officer comes around the corner again and sees him getting in the car. Then he pulls them over, and the two guys that locked him out, he doesn't worry about them. Who does he go after? He goes after my brother, the one that identified himself, told him what was going on and how he couldn't open the gate, and arrested him and took him in, but let the other two go. So you tell me what was wrong with that. So then he got in trouble for, he got cited for associating with gang members.
Boy, that's really weird. We're still standing here in the hot sun. It's not such a bad day today. The sky's blue. It's been more than 100 degrees for a whole month before this. This is the first nice day we've had. But this is a very grim story. And it seems like you just... Instead of unlike a lot of other people, you're not willing to let this go.
I can't. It's personal.
And I got to congratulate you on that. I'm serious. That's very good of you to keep fighting for your little brother.
I have to. There's
a handicapped little brother.
There's a story behind that. My brother, you know, he was never classified as handicapped because
he didn't ask for it.
Exactly. You look at all his prison papers, it said on there, he would decline being disability. He would go into general.
And he could have had money for all that, all these years in...
My brother worked. That's the thing. This is a one-sided story, like the papers, you know, they keep saying. Everybody was mad because of the story they printed on Wednesday about the city hall, that it was all one-sided. Well, guess what? When my brother died and they profiled his picture laying dead on the floor with his eyes open and just shit-talked him about how he was a parolee and how he was a robber and this and that. Well, you know what? That was one-sided, and my hands were tied at that time. There was nothing I can do. But now that I've had time to let it sink in a little bit and get my head on straight, now I'm going to fight back. And it's personal, like I said.
I'm really proud of you, and I think that the audience is too. The audience, people that are going to hear this will really understand, you know, that you're kind of a hero here, and that your brother, he could have been, you know, living on the public. He could have been, instead he worked, and he kept his urines clean. He did everything. He spent 3.5 years in prison just because he stole a 10-pack of beer. And instead, he's laying here dead, buried underneath this grass.
Exactly.
Because a guy who has a long history of crimes and robberies and guns and lying has said that your brother did this robbery by himself and that he didn't know anything.
He didn't, that he was just an innocent bystander, just happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time, basically.
And they sent that guy back to prison for a few years, and they made an example out of your little brother? Because he was in a gang or something, they think?
The other one was a dropout also. But, yeah.
They were both dropouts.
They were
not in gangs.
No. They were saying that my brother basically did it to himself because, you know,
He, in other words, he was driving the car and he shot himself in the head with one hand at the same time?
They're saying, yeah, that he basically turned that corner and didn't put the... First they said he put the car to a complete stop. Then they said...
Was the bullet in the chest or in the head?
God only knows.
Where did they say?
They said it was in the left temple. But when you look at the newspaper...
And which hand was bad?
The right.
The right hand was bad?
Yeah. But when you look at the left temple, you could clearly see it in the poor recorder, and I blew up that picture. There is no entrance wound on the left temple.
There's no entrance wound in the left temple. There's no exit wound either.
Nothing.
And what kind of gun was this?
They're saying it was a .22 caliber revolver. The one that was booked into evidence, I believe, was brown, silver with a brown handle. But then in the supplemental reports, it changes colors as it changes hands and possession. So it's a magical gun, I guess. I don't know.
That's very interesting.
But that gun, everybody in this world knows who that gun belonged to. Because...
Who did the gun belong to?
To Hector. There are so many witnesses I know that was his gun, just by the description of it. And we have pictures of Hector with his gun.
With that gun?
Yes. His sister, his own little sister, told me one day that it was his brother's gun.
Wow. And you're going to keep this up?
I have to.
What if they try to stop you, Irene? What if somebody starts to harass you?
I can honestly say that before, I had nothing to really look forward to in life because my own personal life, I've had some, you know, fallbacks and stuff. And I had really nothing going, nothing really to live for. And I remember asking God a couple times, you know, give me some ambition, something, an ambition in life or something. You know, a sense of direction here so I can get going again. And God knows I never wanted this to be my ambition in life, to find out who killed my brother and why. You know, my family has never experienced death. Not even my grandma. My grandma's 91 years old and she's still kicking. She's alive, you know, still walks every day. This is the first time my family's ever saw death. And this was as close as it gets because he was my other half, is what people don't see.
How come you're so tough? You don't cry?
Because I've cried enough. I can't cry anymore because it's not getting me anywhere. And every time I cry, it's like there's a bond that me and him share because he is my other half. We are the two siblings that are... They took away my other half, basically. You know, me and him are the ones that have the same father.
Oh, so you're full brother and sister.
We're full-blooded brother, sister. And I never took the time for him. I never valued his life. And I basically took him for granted that he'd always be there for me. And he'd always be around. That I could put him off on the side of my mind. And that whenever I felt like being a sister to him, I would be there for him.
Tell me, you weren't talking to him when you died. You said that to the newspaper. Why weren't you talking to him when he died?
Because we got into a fight at my mom's house over my personal life and things that he didn't agree with, you know, the way my marriage and stuff like that. It was all personal life, and he was frustrated at me.
He wanted you to, straighten out or something?
He wanted me to basically accept that my marriage is over and get a divorce, basically, and come home.
Did you ever do that?
After my brother died, I did go home, but I went back, and it's a struggle that I'm still, you know, trying to figure out. I guess, deal with. So yeah, every time that I think about this day and night, I have these supplemental reports memorized frontwards and backwards. You know, it's personal. And when you have I had a conversation with the chief of police of Portugal, with Silva Rodriguez, and I remember telling him about all my concerns and how I needed all the answers to these questions, how I wanted my brother's personal belongings. And there's something that I will never forget is what he told me. He told me, Irene, what sounds like here is that you want me to put on a trial for you. You want me to tell you the name of the officers. You want step by step. You want everything in detail. You want me to tell you how and when and why. You know what? I'm not going to do that.
But wait a minute. The only way to do that is to sue.
Exactly. But
and that's what you've done?
Yes. But he told me, you know what?
You can't sue?
No. What he was telling me was that he was never going to do that. He was never going to put on a trial for me. Well, you know what? Never say never. Because as far as the way it's going...
Wait a minute. That's your choice whether there's a trial for you.
Yeah, but when he was on the phone, I wanted him to tell me all these things.
That's a wrongful death suit. It's what he was talking about.
Exactly.
He was saying he wasn't going to give you a wrongful death suit. It doesn't make sense because it's you who asked for the wrongful death suit.
Well, at first I was just asking for the answers to the questions that he couldn't answer because he was hiding behind some...
This is a civil suit, right?
This is an unlimited civil suit.
Civil suit, which means the balance.
It's for unlimited amount of money because it's not about the money.
So you're not even being selfish about this?
We have not named money because of the fact that like the lawyer said...
Are you paying for the attorney?
No.
The attorney took it pro bono?
Yes and no, because we are going to pay investigation for the investigator. We are paying for that.
So you are paying for this?
Yes, somewhat.
But he's doing his part?
Probably pro bono, for a favor.
That's very nice of him.
He's a lawyer.
And he's from where?
He's from Southern California. It's out of the Rand Law Firm. And he comes from a law firm, so he's got two law degrees, one from Ireland and one from the United States.
And what's his name?
Nigel Burns.
Nigel Burns.
He's a lawyer that won the largest, Southern California, he won the largest payout, I guess, over somebody losing their spleen or something. So he's got he's done trials before, so.
So he really.
Experienced.
So the truth is going to come out of this.
Yeah. The truth will come out.
Who in the world are you going to get to do the investigation?
I have no idea who he's going to get.
There used to be a former sheriff's deputy who used to do them, but he's retired now.
Oh, it won't be nobody out of Tulare County. I know that for a fact. It will not be nobody in Tulare County.
Well, I used to know that man.
Oh, did you?
Yes. He was a former sheriff's deputy for very good reasons.
Why?
He knew that there were a lot of things wrong with the legal system in Tulare County for many years.
Yeah, that might explain why we don't have a medical examiner in Tulare County. Why?
We didn't have a fire marshal for about 10 years, 5 years.
Yeah, you explained to me how a Tulare County sheriff...
My Jeep was burned up in an arson fire. This is just funny. And nobody ever investigated because they didn't have a fire marshal.
Really?
They just appointed one. This is almost 5 years later.
That's same thing here. We don't have no medical examiner in Tulare County. I guess we don't have the funds. That's what they keep saying.
Well, we used to have a man that did... There was a doctor, Jude Hayes, who used to do autopsies, and he was honest, but he died.
I don't know. My brother only got a partial autopsy.
By who?
It was performed... I can't remember his name right now off the top of my head.
Where at?
It was done in Tulare County. It was overseen by Tom Wright, which he's, the Tulare County coroner or something.
Was it a real doctor?
The doctor is a doctor. This is just a coroner.
Okay.
But, you know...
You don't mind if we follow up on this story, do you?
No. The thing is, the autopsy, it did not state on there nowhere that he had a black eye and that he had multiple bruises on him.
Black eye and... Wait. I didn't even hear about this. I need a place to sit down. My legs aren't so good. I have a cane, but... Let's go sit on those graves right over there. Not your brother. I have to sit down, too. Let's sit right here. I have a cane over there, but... Okay. Your brother had a black eye? Sit down.
My brother had a black left eye and multiple bruises on his body. I never saw the multiple bruises, but my brother and my sister did because they prepared him for the viewing. They put
No kidding.
Yeah. But everybody noticed the black eye. It had so much caked stuff on there, making it look like it wasn't there, but we could see it. It was obvious that he had a black eye. And nobody documented that on the autopsy.
Well, I'm a psychiatric nurse. And when you have bleeding around an eye, that takes place before death.
That's what I said. But I've asked those questions too, and they just use the regulations or they cannot comment on it because of the fact that we might sue.
Did the autopsy, do you have a copy of the autopsy report?
Not with me.
Does it mention the black eye?
The autopsy report does not mention the black eye. It just says that he was a well-nourished young male, but then they're trying to say that he was a...
Wait, let's go. But there was no black eye mentioned on the autopsy?
No. The only reason why...
Wait, how about other bruises?
No.
But there were other bruises, though?
On his chest.
On his chest?
He had multiple bruises.
How many?
Scuffle or something is what we're thinking.
How many bruises? Describe them.
Well, I never saw them. My older brother saw them, and he says that he had about two bruises, one around his stomach area and one up by his shoulder.
And a black left eye.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, the body was dirty?
We don't know.
You said you had to clean it off to see the black eye?
No. You could see it. They tried to put the makeup on the mortician tried to cover it up a little bit. Like I told you.
Oh, I see. When you saw him, you didn't even see him until the mortician had made him up.
Exactly, after he was embalmed. So how can you put closure to something you don't know nothing about? I don't understand how I ever got away with me letting him get away with the fact that they never let us see the body. I called every single day since he died on Saturday.
Now, a lot of people might wonder why somebody might run from the police. And let me give a little background on that. In this culture, your culture, because I have a close friend, when the police come, you leave, you scram. It doesn't matter if you're in the right or in the wrong most of the time. Because in Mexico, and this is true, when the police show up, it doesn't matter if you're in the right or the wrong, you get out of there. Because they're going to bust you, they're going to throw you in jail, the bad things are going to happen to you, right or wrong. Now, so it's a cultural thing. When the cops come, you leave, you decide what you're going to do, and then you do it. That means turn yourself in later, or whatever you have to do. You have guts, you're a man, you do that. Isn't that right?
Yeah.
I mean, everyone knows that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had some funny experiences with my friend, because I never was afraid of police, even though I knew there were often all kinds of people in the police, some good, some bad, some honest, some heroes, some bad guys. But I stood up and I said, well, I'll fight you then, you know? I mean, I'll stand right up here. I'm not with my fists or anything, but I'll fight you in court. I'll fight you in any way legal under the Constitution. I don't run. But I've learned that in other countries, it doesn't work that way, because I lived in some other countries when I was a kid, and you could be dead, you know? And then who's going to stand up for you later? You're not going to be standing up for anybody. And in this case, that seems to be what happened.
Yeah, dead man can't defend himself, obviously.
Yeah, so he can't defend himself, and that's what you're trying to do, is to find out what actually happened to your brother if he was made to do a robbery and was beaten up and was found with a gun, planted with a gun, without his wallet. Obviously, it was taken from him because he never gave up his wallet.
Exactly.
Let me just put this together because it's... You're not putting it together. Let me put it together. The audience is going to be putting this together. Anybody listening to this is going to put this together. They're going to say, somebody took your brother's wallet. Somebody stuck him in this car and left him in the car, scared, with one hand, right?
Yeah.
And beat up with bruises, with a black eye and bruises on his body, scared to death. He's not going to be thinking about killing himself. And he's not going to be able to do that because it happened. He wasn't even parked when the gun went off.
No, and supposedly he was drunk too. That's what the toxicology showed, that he was intoxicated also.
And he was intoxicated too? So while he was drunk, he was supposed to take one hand to drive and shoot himself in the head at the same time? Around a curve, right? Because this happened on a curve. It did not a straightaway.
No. He had a turn to get to our house. But the car came rolling and it stopped on its own. Didn't put it in park, but a dead person, I guess, had his foot on the brake enough to put the car to stop so the cops could get near it, I guess, and turn it off and put it in park. I have no idea. It's just unreal. So unreal.
This is a really fascinating story, Irene. I can hardly wait to find out what happens here. You don't mind if our listeners follow the story along, do you?
Oh, no. No, because, I mean, sooner or later, there's only one truth in this world. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. That's obvious. But at the end, you're going to have one truth.
Let me say that again. There's only one truth in this world. And everyone's entitled to their opinion. But in the end, you're going to have one truth.
Yeah, that's the way life is.
Thank you, Irene. And this is Glenn Ryan for Not For Sale News Service.